Why don't we go ahead and get started? My name is Jim Keene. I'm city manager of Palo Alto, and I am the moderator for this meeting, which is entitled Web 2.0 and Beyond Online Tools for Community Building. So I do want to welcome everybody here. Of course, when you're ever in a room like this, you say, you know, this is just another example of outdated technology that we're using in the effort to build community. Everybody's sort of sitting there in lines like this. I was going to sit down here, but it's impossible because the podium blocks half of the room for us. So it's just an indicator of, you know, still how many sort of old ways or other ways of doing things stand in the way of us adopting new ways to kind of connect people and do community. And I made a wrong turn earlier when I was here, and I was at the quilting conference. You guys saw that, right? And I thought, actually, that's an inappropriate comparison. You know, quilting is actually sort of a technology that was deployed, as we know, and still is, to actually kind of build community in a way. When a bunch of, you know, people would get, mostly women, I guess, traditionally, but would get together and have a quilting party that would not only be making a quilt, but would be trying to build connections in some community. And so this is just something to kind of think about. And a lot of times that stuff is in the background all the time, or we're looking for it. And we want to think about, okay, what are the approaches or the technologies that we can use that actually advance that? So that's what this meeting is about. Now, we have an abbreviated period of time here. We have an hour and 15 minutes. And so what we want to do is do some very quick presentations from our panel. So that we have a lot of time for follow-up questions. I may ask some and certainly invite questions from the audience. On our panel is Brian Mora, who is the assistant city manager from San Carlos, and he's going to kind of talk to us, kind of give us a scan of Web 2.0 and beyond and some of the vocabulary associated with that. Stephen Cliff is the executive director of eDemocracy.org, who actually, I think, on our panel will be able to provoke us a little bit about the linkages and use of the online technology actually to connect people, democracy, community, and that sort of thing. And then on the far side of our panel is Ariel Colon, who is the city attorney from the city of Ventura and who was years ago the city attorney in the city of Palo Alto. And, of course, he's here also to share with us some of the legal and other design and implementation challenges and issues associated with deploying this sort of technology. I did want to acknowledge that the Institute for Local Government is actually sponsoring this particular session, and you may or may not be aware of it, but the Institute has a lot of great resources and everything, both on its website and actually at the conference website. There's a whole document on social media and public agencies, legal issues to be aware of. So you can go on to the conference website and be able to look at this and download this. It's very useful. I think the Institute has a number of social networking policies. I know that our social networking policy in our city is available, you know, for other cities to look at. Again, online at the League and other cities have that sort of thing. So don't forget that. So, as far as my introduction here, we really want to do two things. It's a very wide and deep subject, and we have a very short period of time. One is recognizing there's a range of familiarity maybe with online tools and their application in our work, and it's rapidly changing and evolving, to have some presentations that at least give people a little bit of a primer and some vocabulary, a little bit of a sense of what other people are doing, and ideas about how you might get started or learn new things. So that's one. The second thing is at least have a chance to talk about, well, why are we doing all of this anyway? And if one goal ultimately, since I often think what we're ultimately about is community building or some other term like that in almost everything we do, how is it that online technology and these new approaches really help us advance community building? And we're only going to be able to scratch the surface. But a couple of thoughts. How many of you were at the ILG luncheon yesterday and heard Peter Shane talk? Okay, so there's about four people there. And he actually, I mean, one of the things we're concerned about is providing value with online media. And he said a couple of things real quickly, that in their research, the value of coordination or better coordination, the ability to solve problems through online technologies, the ability to provide better accountability, certainly of government, and the opportunity to at least connect people is one key value here. A second point I just want to make about why we need to really focus and talk about this is that regardless of where you are or something, I would just suggest we have to deploy these technologies. I mean, in one sense, the game has already changed. It's just a question of where you are in that and how quickly you want to adapt. Our relevance demands that we adapt. And thirdly, we do have to think a little bit about ultimately, well, what is this for? Everything we do is community building. How does this really connect? And my friend Peter Black has a great line once. He said, you know, we get into a lot of trouble when we mistake a tool for an answer. And so it's really important to always be thinking about why and what for we're doing these things. So we will hopefully in a very abbreviated time try to provide at least enough information to talk about all of those things. And without further ado then, I'm going to turn this over to Brian. And Brian will take a little bit more time than our other speakers just since he's going to kind of get us on at least a common platform of sorts. Brian?
Thank you. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to our session on Web 2.0 and beyond. What I thought I would do, is, as Jim said, is set the table a little bit for you and talk about the different areas that we're going to cover, tell you a little bit about what's been going on in the city of San Carlos. We've been using some of the social media tools for the last year. A lot of that had to do with our Vice Mayor, Omar Maad, who's been a real leader in technology and local government. In fact, Omar's here today, so I'm sure he'll enjoy some of this. And, of course, as some of you know, in San Carlos, we had one of the first city websites in the world back in the early 90s, so we've been pioneers in this for a long, long time. So let me kind of frame the issue for you. First of all, you hear the term Web 2.0 and 3.0. To focus it a little bit today, we're going to talk primarily about social media tools. And these are things like blogs, Twitter, Facebook, podcasts. And the way I look at this is these are new ways for you to reach the community and to share information with them. And it's an area where you want to think about, much as Jim had just alluded to, how this fits in your overall strategy of engaging the community and disseminating information. You know, as I note on the slide there, there's a lot of great opportunities here to highlight events, meetings, some of your local businesses we'll talk about in a minute. And as you can see by the slide on the right, since many of you already cablecast your council meetings and oftentimes using vendors like Sire and Granicus, you already have video of some of your events. You need to think about how to reuse that video, not just to put it in the frame of a council meeting, but perhaps share it on your website and in some of these tools. So the first term you hear a lot about are blogs, and this is a term that came from the expression weblog years ago. These were initially almost like personal diaries, where people would talk about issues, projects, hobbies that were close to them. But I think as we think about it, this is also a tool that cities can use, if you think about it. The example we have here is from the town of Belvedere. Their city manager, on a regular basis, typically every couple days, puts up a blog posting. And what he does is he typically focuses on a particular project, development, proposal, or something in the community. He has one topic, but he spends several paragraphs expounding on that one topic. And as you can see by the screenshot I have here, he recently started a three-part series on how city finances work. And so kind of in a almost like fireside chat style, this is George Roderick's, by the way, what George does is he takes the residents through, let's talk about this proposal that's coming up, you know, who's behind it, what's happening, etc., in a very folksy, calm way. And in a small city setting like Belvedere, that works very well. As I note in the slide, the nice thing about blogs, they can be as long or short as you like, the postings. They're often linked to websites, and as I go through this, you'll see that's a common theme to get more information. And another thing that I'm sure we'll talk about with the rest of the panel and probably in the Q&A is on a blog you have your choice of whether discussion and comments can be turned on or off. And I think there are different schools of thought as to, you know, whether you might want to do that or not. Then we move on to Twitter, and the reason I put this in this order is Twitter is also called a microblog, and that is because it is a way for you to, again, share information, but in a very abbreviated form. In Twitter, you only have 140 characters to say what you're going to say, and I'm sure for those of you who've never used it, you're probably thinking, how could you do anything with that? So you might, as you might imagine, the key here is to be very brief and terse. To use abbreviations. There are tools, for example, where you can take a web address and shorten it. I was amused recently. I was looking at some of the new model policies about social media, and I ran across one city where someone had drafted something saying that in that city's Twitter feed, there would be no abbreviations. And I thought, obviously, this was written by someone who's never used Twitter, because it's just not possible to do it that way. But again, similar to a blog, you'll see that with Twitter, The messages are often linked to a website, again, to get more information. And as you can see in this particular example, this is the city of San Carlos's Twitter feed. We do use abbreviations. Also, we use something called hashtags. That's the little pound sign with a word. And the significance of that is that's also a shorthand way not only to abbreviate something, but also to index it. So, for example, if you click on, as you can guess by, you know, using a website, that blue highlighted text that says San Carlos, when you click on it, suddenly you get an instant index of all of the discussions on Twitter, not just from the city of San Carlos, but anywhere about San Carlos. And so we purposely use hashtags on a number of occasions. Another interesting example, and we can talk more about later if you'd like, is last weekend I was one of the volunteers during the unfortunate circumstances in San Bruno, and someone, even before I had gotten to the EOC, had set up a San Bruno fire hashtag, and I thought, perfect. And so I got on there, installed the Twitter software, and some of the San Bruno staff were like, what is he doing? And I began to broadcast out the official stuff on the San Bruno fire hashtag, and as it turned out, there were actually people who were impacted who were watching that. So it's not even something I set up, but because it was there, I grabbed it and said, okay, we're going to use that. So it's a great tool. And again, the thing about Twitter, and also we'll talk about Facebook, is both of these services are free. So at a time when many of us are budget constrained and you can't do new technology initiatives, I'll certainly admit to you all of these take staff time, but there is no cost. So again, another big attraction. The other thing here to focus on is the audience. Twitter today, the last stats I saw, has 190 million users around the world, and there are 65 million messages or tweets posted daily. So as Jim alluded to, whether you're using this or not, this is where a lot of your residents are, and if you want to talk with them, you need to be here. And then we move over to Facebook. And as some of you know, and I guess starting October 1st, there'll be a movie about Facebook. You know, this initially started out as a way for college kids to share information and news. It started out as a very young audience, and then we began to see families and get online and share information and what was going on in pictures, and now we're seeing seniors coming online, pretty much becoming universal. But also, as you might guess, similar to what we were talking about earlier with Twitter and blogs, also a way for you to connect your city with the public. Again, it's an opportunity to provide links to information, events, photos. In our city, our emphasis on Facebook is event calendars. You know, we tell you when the Art and Wine Fair is, and we show you pictures to encourage you to attend. We tell you when the council meetings are. We tell you when key development hearings are coming up. But in Facebook, the audience is even bigger. The latest estimates there are over 500 million users worldwide, and what's more compelling to my point of view is 50% or every other user signs on every day. So there's a lot of people there. And in fact, today we're told that more people get information via Facebook than by Google searches. So the gravity has shifted on some of these things. And again, as I note, the audience is a little different than Twitter. Twitter's very technical, whereas in the case of Facebook, you tend to have a younger group. And what's key in all of these tools, as you think about them, is you're reaching different folks as you use different tools. Then we have podcasts, which you probably heard about. And podcast, the word was derived from two words, the iPod, you know, obviously the Apple device to play music, and video or audio casts, you know, broadcasting. So a podcast is what it sounds like. It's a way for you to broadcast audio and video files. Start out audio only. Now, obviously, with the smartphones that many of you have or the iTouch or devices like that, you can do both audio and video. And again, this is another way for you to share events, share information about a topic. I know initially most cities tend to use this to put up their council meetings in you know, MP3 audio files and then video clips, but you can obviously use it for other events. The example I'm showing here is from the city of Morgan Hill. The gentleman, some of you may know, who's the city manager, is a guy named Ed Tweez, and he literally carries around a digital recorder. So if you see Ed at certain events, don't be surprised if he whips out his and said, let's do a podcast, and puts it in your face and you start talking. It's his way of getting more information to his community, and I think it's a great use of that particular technology. So just to wrap up before we go to the next speaker, some initial thoughts, and again, as we engage in the dialogue later, we can talk more. One of the things that I've observed over the years is more and more we're seeing people sort of tuning in and tuning out of what's going on in city government, for good or for bad, and it's kind of a clash between the way we do business in terms of having these long processes of multiple meetings on controversial topics, EIRs, where if you're really affected by an issue, our expectation in local government and all levels of government, I guess, is that you're supposed to go to a series of meetings and stay involved to know all the information. But yet, in today's world where we have families and you know, kids at soccer practice and other things going on, you know, how realistic is that really? And so the challenge is for the residents, how do they keep on top of what we're doing when just by definition they have to tune in and out? And they do, as I know, get information from various sources. I think as city leaders we have to realize they're not just, you know, reading the newspaper or even going to our website. They're using these other tools. And if we want to reach them where they live, this is the way you do it. I refer to this when you share the same information in different places as being multi-channel. I'm not sure that's the right term, but I think that's one way to do it. And one of the keys here is, you know, people always worry about the time requirements or whatever. In our program, we're really not creating any new information. We're just using the same information different ways and showing it to you different places. Also to, you know, kind of get people to come in the door, if you will, with these different tools. We're trying to display it or describe it or present it based on the tool used. That's why if you go to our Twitter site or our feed or our Facebook site, you'll notice everything's done slightly differently. We're trying to capture the theme or some people call it the vibe of each of those services. We've found, and I can tell you a little some stories later about some of our initial mistakes that we made. And I've got hit with a Nerf bat several times when we started, and I learned, you know, you have to obey the vibe of each site, but there are fairly easy ways to do that. And I also note, and as you can see here, I have a picture of, in this case, it's our website. Don't forget your website. I've had questions from people saying, well, now that I'm on social media, I'll turn off the website. No, that's not how it works. The website is your central repository of information. Think of these other tools, whether it's email, Twitter, Facebook, as spokes coming off of the main wheel. Because on your website, obviously, you have the space to put on entire EIRs or reports or videos, whereas, obviously, as you've just seen on Twitter and Facebook, the space is very limited and constrained. So it's really a case of using them together, not using one or the other. And then finally, again, as I'm sure we'll talk about a bit later, you need to think about what's your strategy and what are your goals. Is your goal to send out information? Do you want to inform? Do you want to have a discussion group? Do you want to do both? I don't think there's necessarily a right or wrong answer to that question, by the way, but I do think that as part of moving ahead, you really do have to think about, you know, why you're doing this in the first place. And so with that, let me turn it back over to Jim.
Great. Thank you very much, Brian. Why don't you just think over
pop up. All right. Great. Well, good day. One thing I should note is I come all the way here from Minneapolis, so I'm glad to hear about these great projects here in California. I'm going to be taking a more of a community building perspective as a citizen. So I run a nonprofit that does online community building. And I'm going to go quite quickly. So when I've spoken for 5 minutes, let me know, and that way I can round up. First things first, we have to start with an enemy. Not very convincing. There's our enemy. All right. And the enemy is this idea that it's good that nobody knows your dog on the internet. Because what we have in most local communities is the media, online news commenting, adopting anonymous comments as the default. Right now, in most communities, the ability to envision the net as a good thing for community building is being eroded by "no one knows you're a dog." And so the question is, if we actually envision a better way to use the internet in our community, what might that be? So I'm going to try and give some examples. So the big question, if I just leave you with one thing, is what is your community, not just what is your government, doing to use online engagement to survive? Right now it's survival, right? And then now hopefully thriving. And it's going from that potential of this medium. You mentioned you kind of have to do it. You know, so there are things that you can do. But now, what should you do with the scarcity of time, resources? What should you do now? So I'll start with the big cheese first. So edemocracy.org hosts online neighborhood forums. We have them in 15 different communities. We have a whole bunch now in Minneapolis and St. Paul. We actually have a couple in England and one in New Zealand. And on the Powderhorn Neighbors Forum, where we have about 15% of the households talking every day, two-way, someone said, "Our cheese did not make it to Seattle. I'm your neighbor. I work at Pastureland. Is anyone here by chance flying to Seattle tonight or tomorrow? Because Homeland Security doesn't allow us to ship overnight anything more than 15 ounces. Okay. Someone replied and said, "I'm your neighbor. You don't know me, but I'm a former airline employee. I've been looking for an excuse to go to Seattle. Where do I pick up the cheese?" The person who wrote the note, you know, he was actually out of town. He was like out in Wisconsin somewhere, and this circle of cheese made it from Minneapolis to Seattle to be part of a national cheese competition. And this actually was from, it got documented on the cheese blogs. Now, if that's not making it, I don't know what is. All right. 27% of American adults say that they use, or internet users, excuse me, they use digital tools to talk to their neighbors and keep informed about community. All different tools, email lists, web forums, blogs, you name it. People are actually using the tools to connect to their neighbors. This also includes people who just have emailed their neighbors. But it's a good baseline, I think. My kids on your right are at our community garden. I have a forum in my neighborhood with about 15% of households. And one of the first things that people brought up was, "Hey, wouldn't it be nice to have a community garden in our area?" And me too, me too. And a year and a half later, we now have a community garden two blocks from my house. They're actually leasing the land from the Department of Transportation along a light rail link that took away too many. It was going to be a road, but they took away too many houses 20 years ago or whatever. And the city council member played a role in that because she's on the forum. She saw how she could assist, and as well as the neighborhood association. So citizens talking to citizens within the context of geography. So there's a big block, though. So some community sites, like Facebook. How many of you have a Facebook page by your government? Okay. How many of you have a Facebook page just about your community in general that somebody started? Okay, so Stillwater, Minnesota, someone just started a page, has over 10,000 fans or friends. Now, the population is like 15,000 for that town, okay? And obviously not everyone lives in the town. And this one is citizen-run, and it's been in the newspaper. And so I posted on there saying, "Does anyone have a copy of that Strib article about this page? What was that city manager's quote again?" And actually, I was fact-checked. It was actually the Pioneer Press. But here's the quote from the article from the city administrator. "He did not know much about Facebook. I've never been there. I'm okay with that. In fact, he said he wasn't even sure if he could access Facebook from his computer. I think it's blocked." So here's one of the challenges, is that as more and more walls are built that block our government from accessing where our citizens are online, with the fear they're going to use it for personal use, and then also then basically close off the ability for the communications person to easily correct the record or correct the fact, it reminds me of the Berlin Wall. There's Kennedy, right? And then, you know, when they broke through the wall, this is in reverse, but it's kind of like I can imagine the civil servant kind of looking out. What is that going on the other side of there? And I really think it's important to realize that if we can't listen to the people, how can we engage them where they are? So it's a big opportunity. I'm doing some work with the National League of Women Voters on Sunshine 2.0, and I've gone from what could a government do to trying to speculate what a government should do. And so we need input on this, but the idea is, you know, what are things that you could do to support democracy? This isn't all just about engagement, but I'm going to give you a couple of quick examples. Palo Alto, my friends here, have just met. I've actually identified their no zone as a great example of sort of a your government. How do you present your information based on a citizen perspective where they might not understand how the system works. The Sunlight Foundation is pushing a concept called public equals online, trying to say that everything that's published should be online. They do this actually in Estonia. In Palo Alto, they have an actual index of emails sent to all council members by city staff, as I understand it, as a transparency measure. Pretty interesting. Cam Gordon has City of Minneapolis has a great job providing every one of our 14 council members a set of pages. Everyone gets an email newsletter. But oddly enough, while they let staff work on the blog that they have host, their policy bans a link to the blog, which doesn't really make a lot of sense. And Cam Gordon's on Facebook, and there is no link from his page to Facebook. And so basically the elites in our community that know Cam Gordon through personal connections can find him, but his constituent can't find him. And so that's another sort of blockage that we need to think about opening up. If you're looking for great examples of online engagement going back, look to the UK. A lot of this predates Facebook and the like, so things are happening more rapidly in some ways now. But askbristol.org, they use a blog for input on specific issues. They basically say, hey, here's a report that's coming out, or we're looking for input on this. And they've added that structure that allows them to get some quality input. Redbridge, you can't really see it too well, but basically over here you can click it, put in your postal code and for my neighborhood. And one of the key ways to engage people is geographic relevancy, right? Put in where you live and be told about stuff that matters to you based on where you live. Or show information generically that you could then react to. Inclusion, one of the biggest problems in all of this is even for those who are online, folks who are wealthier, more educated, are obviously doing this neighborhoods online stuff a lot more than those who are lower income. We have a grant from the Ford Foundation to do some work in Cedar Riverside neighborhood, a large Somali neighborhood, as well as over in St. Paul in the Frogtown neighborhood, which is large Hmong, Southeast Asian population, and African-American population. And this is the magic technology. It's the paper sign-up sheet. It's the, pull a tab at the coffee shop. And so when you think about building things online, it isn't just build it, they will come. What can you do to really provide real outreach? And so finally, there's a lot of resources at edemocracy.org/p3 about our inclusion work. And one more set of links. Oh, yeah, big whoop-de-doo. Lots of big whoop-de-doo resources here. There's a 45-minute webinar about this whole stuff that I've been talking about here. There's an online group called City Camp, where sort of the local government 2.0 folks are meeting the citizen folks. And then there's a reading list that I put together at edemocracy.org/sunshine. And I think that's my last slide. Yep, and I'll just leave that up while the next speaker comes
up. Thank you very much. Okay, so thank you very much, Steve. And after that exciting kind of community or citizen perspective, the League insisted we bring a city attorney up here to... I'm just kidding, but in reality, we ask Ariel to speak to this because there are a lot of implications of what this means, and we thought he'd be a good city attorney who would let you know what you want to watch for without scaring you into doing nothing. Okay, Ariel?
Thanks, Jim. Well, what I was going to start by saying is that we witnessed incredible success of technology in the second half of the 20th century and in the first part of this century. And one of the reasons was that technology didn't sit around waiting for the lawyers to tell them what was okay and what was not okay. We're in a situation where technology is happening and lawyers are fundamentally historians. We fundamentally look back and see what the court said in the past and try and apply it to future scenarios. We don't have a lot of court cases giving us guidance on how Web 2.0, how the interactions that go with Web 2.0 are going to be governed. So we're going to try today to outline just a checklist of the issues that are likely to come up. But I want to emphasize, don't let fear of legal concerns slow your community down. You should go ahead and move forward. The law will adapt. Okay, the major sources of law we'll talk about are the First Amendment, the reason being that what we fundamentally do when we create a place on the web, whether it's through Facebook or a blog, is to create a new kind of public forum where people gather, and the speech rights that come from the Constitution apply there as well. There are Brown Act concerns. That's our Sunshine Law here in California. Public Records Act, which is the other half of the Sunshine Package. And employment law comes up as well because your community's employees will have a right to speak as well on the Internet. Finally, we'll give just a brief nod to the restrictions on the use of public resources. Okay, I mentioned that when you create a place on the web, you're creating a public forum. The law is traditionally broken down public forums, public fora, into three categories. The traditional public forum would be someplace like a park or a sidewalk where all kinds of speech is permitted, and the government really is extremely restricted in trying to censor what people can say in those places. The second kind of public forum is a designated public forum. That's one that where the government takes action to create a place for people to speak. So that's what we're talking about with the web. The web doesn't necessarily start out as a place for the community to interact, but we are creating these places now. Finally, a limited public forum is a kind of designated public forum that we really want to shoot for creating for our social media. What a limited public forum does is allow the government to open a place only to certain persons or to certain topics. So what you can do is create a place on the web where people are allowed to come together and speak about certain topics. You don't have to allow a Wild West scenario where anyone can talk about any topic on the Facebook page. You can limit comments to comments that are relevant to the topics that are being brought up. In fact, that's what we do with our city council meetings. How many of us are elected officials here? So most of the audience. Your city council meeting is a classic example of a limited public forum. You can't show up there and outside of public communications speak about anything. Even under public communications, you can only speak about items that are within the subject matter jurisdiction of the city. So the law has said there are only certain topics that you can talk about. So we want to create this limited public forum with our website. And how do you do it? Well, first of all, you have to recognize that once you create this limited forum, you have to follow your own rules. So creating a social media policy is an important first step to have. What you can do basically is exclude speech when it's reasonable to do so. Very simple standard. Is it reasonable to exclude a certain kind of speech from your website? You can't discriminate, though, on the basis of the viewpoint of the speech, meaning if someone disagrees with a statement you make, that can't be the reason for excluding them from the forum. Disagreement is allowed. So what do? Establish solid, reasonable rules by way of a social media policy. Now, on Facebook, there are tabs up at the top of the screen, and the better public websites, meaning government websites, have a terms of use tab there that clearly establish their social media policy and give the users notice that certain kinds of commentary won't be allowed. As I said, you can't delete comments because you might disagree with their point of view. Someone wants to say that the mayor was dead wrong in voting to support the shopping center approval. That's perfectly fair game. But you can discourage and delete comments that are off-topic, profane, encourage discrimination, offensive racial comments, or other kinds of discriminatory comments, sexual content, commercial solicitations, or copyright infringement, if you say so in your policy. So the key to this is having a tab on your Facebook page, and that's what we're primarily worried about here. It says terms of use, and on your terms of use, having a policy that says, here's what's allowed. Same could apply to a blog. If you're going to allow comments back to a blog that's produced by an elected official using city resources, or by an appointed official using city resources, you can have terms of use that explain the kinds of comments that are going to be allowed. Let's talk about the Brown Act just quickly. We're all aware that the Brown Act forbids serial communications, meaning serial meetings, meaning communications among a majority of the legislative body outside of a noticed public meeting. And that can happen by email. You've all been trained on that. It could also happen through Twitter or through a Facebook page. You can imagine multiple council members responding to the same comment. So in some ways, our current California Sunshine Law is oppressive to the technological reality we have today in that it forbids open dialogue by elected officials on public websites. And from my perspective, that's an area we're going to need on working to change the law because it doesn't make a lot of sense. What is more open in public than a listing of comments on a website? It has all the characteristics of a public meeting, only it's even better because the record is kept of who said what. So there doesn't seem to be a policy reason for restricting the ability of elected officials to comment on Facebook pages or on blogs or even using Twitter, but that is the law. Public Records Act. Well, there are no cases that address the specific issue of whether material posted on Facebook or a blog is public record. But when you look at the definition of public record, it includes anything that is owned, prepared, used, or retained by the agency. So I would submit that it's very likely that anything you put up on a Facebook page would be public record and would be disclosable under the Public Records Act. How long you have to maintain that is an issue for another body of law. Generally, there's a two-year standard for retaining records. How can you go about doing this? Well, because the web is so dynamic, I would probably urge people to periodically print copies just to keep an historical record in case they ever asked what was on the website in June of 2009. That's very cumbersome, but I don't know any other way to really freeze in time a record of what's been posted on a website or on a Facebook page. So comments made on a city Facebook page by the city, clearly public record, clearly open to disclosure if requested. Again, it's an area where the Sunshine Law doesn't seem to make a lot of sense because it's by its very definition public already when it's out there on the web. Okay, employee speech rights. This is peripherally related to new media, but you need to keep in mind the same rules that apply for any other kind of employee speech. An employee can speak as a private citizen on matters of public concern unless the government can justify that it would be harmful to efficient operations of the government. That's a very broad standard, and that allows public employees to assert illegal activity, misuse or waste of funds, or inefficiency on public websites, and depending where they are in the organization, they may be able to do that within their First Amendment rights. So the fact that a negative comment about the organization is happening on a website doesn't fundamentally affect the First Amendment issue there. The public employee has a First Amendment issue so long as they are not adversely affecting the efficient operations of the government. Finally, I wanted to throw out there just as a reminder that the government code does have restrictions on the use of public resources. As you can see from the slide, they can't be used for campaign activities, and most of the good social media policies forbid campaign activity on the Facebook page or other website. And it can't be used for personal purposes other than incidental or minimal use. Now, you see that it says personal or other purposes which are not authorized by law. My city, Ventura, has actually adopted a social media policy that encourages employees to communicate that way. And so I believe that overrides 8314 in authorizing employees to, as part of their job, use social media in connection with the duties they're performing. So those are the basics that I wanted to get across, and I'm sure we'll have questions and answers. A couple of resource places. There are some technical tricks to setting up a government Facebook page. This is the URL that will take you there. And, of course, the Institute for Local Government has a wonderful compendium of social media policies that you can take a look at or give copies of to your staff to help you get going. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Aaron.
Thank you very much for our panel. I think I'll stand up here, and you guys can probably sit down there just so I can see people in the audience to be able to call on them. But before we just start doing that, I was curious, say, Brian, I mean, if you were to sort of handicap for us and give us a recommendation on what you think in the tools that are available right now, are there some that have a higher and more immediate return on investment for folks, or is it just sort of just start and see what works for you?
I think in terms of the social media tools, and I can give you some statistics on what we're finding, we have over 560 followers or people following us on Twitter, but we have 2,300 people following us on Facebook. So in terms of if you want to reach the broadest audience, Facebook's probably the place to start. The other thing I'd add, and again, I think I touched on it in my presentation, the audiences are different in those two services, and that's probably the reason you may want to use both. I find that people on Twitter tend to be much more the smartphone users and the folks who are more technical in nature, and I think that probably comes with the medium in that they're comfortable with all the abbreviations and links and that sort of thing, the techno babble, whereas people on Facebook tend to be more families and folks who are maybe not as technical and won't put up with a lot of that. So I think that, you know, if I were to pick one, to Jim's question, I would probably start with Facebook. On the other hand, if you're trying to be multi-channel, to use that term, you may want to go with both.
Well, that's great. As a home to Facebook, we really appreciate that plug there. So thank you. Another question I had for Steve, particularly sort of in a sense from our kind of community perspective. If we, people who are here today, when you go home, want to know what is the first thing that they could do to enhance community through online media, what would you suggest?
Sure. Priorities are great, very important. This is going to sound old-fashioned, but from a government perspective, with your website, the most important thing that you can do is allow someone to say, tell me what's new, here's my email address. Because no matter how good your website is or how bad your website is, it can always have something new, right? It could be that monthly, what's new on our website email newsletter. Or, hey, we now have a new Facebook page. Or, hey, now we're on Twitter. But we've generally found is that if you can get into someone's mailbox, if they've opted in, you've created a much stronger relationship than even our Facebook fans on our online groups. So that's maybe not so much about community building there, but it's really about giving yourself the opportunity so that when you do community building online, you can actually tell people about it at a very low cost relative to what it would cost to advertise in the newspaper or whatever it might be in a year from now to reach thousands of people.
Just to add on that briefly, a couple of thoughts. Some of these things I think almost come and go out of fashion. I can recall before we had a website, we used to email things to people, and then we had a website and people moved from email to web. And then we set up an email list or a listserv, as they call it, and now we have people who, even though we post thing on the web, refuse to admit that we've shared it with them until they get it personally emailed to them. It's all about service, you know. So there is that, and I think Steve's right, that, and again, it gets back to being, you know, multi-channel. You want to send things to some people and not others. But in terms of what's new, I think you're right. That is a key feature. I'm sure many of the cities now do that. When we set up our website in the early 90s, I think we were probably the first city that had a What's New page. And to this date, we now even have an RSS feed where you can subscribe to it because it is, people do want to find out what's different. Now, what's nice about things like Twitter and Facebook is the newest post is always at the top. So it's just by default, you can always find out what's new. But on a website, you're exactly correct. You've got to make it easy. And certainly in things like city newsletters or blogs, putting out what's new and then linking back is important.
Great, thanks. So let's go ahead and start taking some questions, and if we run into some gaps, I certainly have a lot too. This woman here in the front, if you don't mind, I saw your hand up first, even though this gentleman's closest to the mic. Would you go to the microphone? We are recording. Thank you.
Sure. Monica Garcia, councilwoman in the city of Baldwin Park, San Gabriel Valley. My question is, in this economic climate, when cities are cutting back, What do you allocate, you know, what are the resources that you allocate toward managing the social media? Do you hire an IT person to, you know, just manage that full time? What are some of the costs? I mean, what are your recommendations?
Okay. Brian, did you want to take
it? Okay, let me take a shot at that. A couple things. You're right about constrained budgets. In our city, we've had 10 years in a row of budget cuts, so we certainly know all about that. What we try to do in terms of being respectful of departments' time and that is we designate a certain amount of time each day to post so we don't, you know, make it a big feature. Also, I'll share with you an interesting story, and this may run counter to what some of you might assume or believe. And I was sharing this actually with our vice mayor earlier today. When we first set up our Twitter feed, I actually linked it to Stephen's point, the What's New feed, and we were posting everything, and we got slammed by everybody who thought we were overdoing it. We were spamming them, and people said, stop that, you're sharing way too much information. And I stopped and said, I beg your pardon, it's rare that I get accused of being too transparent. So I said, tell me about that. And the expectation was I was only going to share things that were immediate, that just broke, that were headlines, and not everything. That people expected everything to be on the website. So again, it's one of the things you have to have, you know, what is the role? But that helped me to your question about, I said, okay, well then we don't have to spend as much time on this because people will actually get upset if we do. And so it is a matter of being selective. The other thing that you mentioned about IT, in our city, the way we do it, the IT person is actually the backup poster. But one of the hats I wear is the PIO. I'm the lead poster, and I would suggest if your city has a PIO or a communications person, or if not, someone in the manager's office, that's who should be posting, because this really isn't about the technology. It's about the information you're sharing. So you need somebody who's a generalist who has a good view of what's going on in the city to be posting. And again, as one who used to manage IT, nothing against IT, but I think, again, your communications person, or if you don't have one of those, the manager's office is the place to start.
I would just sort of add just to that, you know, the tendency can be, particularly for a small community or, you know, very strapped one, say, we just kind of can't afford to do this, or if we get into this, how do we maintain it? We all know we can't have a what's new portion of our website and not have what's new stuff on there, or it's really counterproductive. So the tendency can be to not engage. But, you know, in the same way that we think, well, you know, yes, we may have to cut. We may even have to cut in public safety, but it's essential. We've got to recognize that how we're connecting and communicating is absolutely essential to the effectiveness of our city and find some way. So a couple of thoughts. I mean, obviously, there are a lot of young people out there in the world who are really savvy. And you know, you probably just get your neighbor to come over and the 13 or 14-year-old kid and could do incredible things. Now, there are things you have to work through, but we have to think about unconventional ways to get some assistance. A lot of young interns are in the millennial generation can do incredible stuff. The other thing, those of you who were at the ILG luncheon yesterday, Peter was talking about, say, for example, what the D.C. government did as far as actually putting out a reward. They put out a $50,000 reward for the best technological solution that for is something they were after, and they've calculated that the value of what they got for that competition was over $2 million in technology development. So you want to think about all the assets in a community that you could tap into by taking different ways of looking at it. Thank you. Yes, sir.
My question is for Ariel. One of the issues that a couple of council members have brought up at our city is this whole the serial meeting that can happen within Facebook pages. And so the question was, well, do you let your council members be friends of your page because of the fact that you could be having somebody ask you a question and you give this opinion on a particular meeting that happened or a particular issue? What have you heard anything about that? I mean, what's the constraints of allowing you have your own Facebook page and then let your six council members be friends on that Facebook page?
Yeah, I'm embarrassed to say I've thought about it quite a bit. The
really?
If it's a unilateral communication, meaning one way, I don't think you have a problem. Putting something up, if I want to be a fan of your Facebook page and you post something, there's no Brown Act issue there. The issue comes with a response. So it's the same advice you've probably been given about the reply to all button on email. Okay. Compare putting it up on the web page to buying a billboard near downtown and saying, I'm opposed to the shopping center at, you know, 4th and Main Street. There's no Brown Act violation there. The concern comes when there's a substantive reply from one of your colleagues.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yep.
So we've had over 1,000 people on the Minneapolis Issues Forum, including all the elected officials, either they or their staff have been on there. And we've never had someone say this open, transparent spot space has, in a legal way, it, you know, can't be used. However, though, as lawyers are catching up, they're beginning to scare away elected officials more. And so I'm waiting for someone to be charged with, you know, being open and transparent online as a violation. So if you know anyone, if it's ever happened anywhere, I will help personally create your defense fund, and we will make you a freedom fighter for the future of America, because in all the small towns that we're in now, in rural Minnesota, it's they've taken legal advice from a central spot who basically says, just don't touch it. And they combine private group communication, the reply to all advice, with the public space communication, and it's really slowing things down.
Thank you. Yes.
Hi, I'm Cynthia Matthews. I'm from the City of Santa Cruz, City Council member, and I've found this very helpful.
Sure.
So my first question is it available to other people who aren't here? You're taping it?
Yes, we're audio taping this.
It will be audio, several things, actually. The PowerPoints will be online.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay, because there's a lot to chew on here.
Yes.
One thing I didn't hear you mention was city newsletters, one way out, like Constant Contact or something like that. So if any of you have experience, and I'll just say I find our conventional media, both print and broadcast, are absolutely driven by the conflict, you know,
right.
bad government, bad public sector.
Right.
So it's really hard to get out our positive story, and I see the social media as just a great and inexpensive way to do that. So,
well, I think you answered your question, but was there more to it?
Cause no, just
I think
that's
one of the number one compelling reasons to do this.
Yeah.
Is the asymmetry in the world now as far as what people are hearing, and
yeah.
if you don't have a voice and we don't have a way to get that out, then we're
yeah.
really lost. Okay, yes.
Michael Coleman with League Staff. We've talked about Twitter and Facebook as examples of this sort of bulletin board-like technology, and I'm wondering about alternatives to those, both because you do have particularly private employers out there that are blocking those, mm-hmm. and you have issues with, well, this is it's a platform where the rules are governed by a private entity that, you know, they mm-hmm. change the rules sometimes, and that can be a little frustrating, a little disconcerting. So I'm wondering what, off-the-shelf server-based packages, what other kinds of things might be available, and how you feel about using alternatives.
Right. I think to Michael's question, there are some alternatives to things, particularly like Twitter, that are out there, and I've seen some cities using them. I think the reason that we took a pass on that, first of all, and again, I don't want to sound too frugal or cheap here, but some of them cost money and Twitter is free, so that to me was the first thing. The second was that it seemed to me that since you've already got such a built-in audience on Twitter and Facebook, that if you really, the goal is to reach the largest number of people, you probably want to be where they are versus saying, I just bought, you know, sort of the Twitter clone, let's call it, that costs several thousand dollars to buy and so much a month. And unless I promote it as a city, I can't even drive people there because they've never heard of, and I can't remember the name of what it is. On the other hand, I'll tell you that you're right, it is a private tool, and we do have to adapt. Part of it, as I talked about earlier, is figuring out how do these tools fit in the city world, and the other is also how to get added features to address our concerns. For example, one of the projects I'm working on right now is one of our a former youth commissioners, believe it or now works for Facebook, and he and I have had a back-channel discussion here for a while about how to deal with the topic that Ariel and Steve were talking about earlier about recording what's on your Facebook page. I've seen some policies where cities said, you know, we will document all this and record it, and I said, you know, how so, with what? You know,
mm-hmm.
there was a suggestion to print it out. You could do that. So we're actually working on a project with them right now about, you know, archiving to the cloud and things like that. It seems to me if we're using a web-based tool, there should be web-based tools to archive too. But again, before we started this discussion, discussion or dialogue, again, it was not on their radar. They didn't really think about what would happen when cities and counties use this. They didn't think about what would happen in states like California and Florida with public records and sunshine laws and the need to archive. And it was like, oh, okay, well, that's not on our list, but it could be.
A quick info dump here, and feel free to ask me afterwards, but there's a new effort called Civic Commons trying to promote open source sharing across governments. Moodle is an online tool, open source, that a lot of universities use. So if you're a university town, you might have somebody at the university that uses that in classroom settings, but you could use Moodle. Like Drupal, another tool, open source tool, there's all kinds of modules, survey tools, and the like. We use a tool called Group Server, and I'll just mention this, is that if you want information on our neighborhood forums and the like, in our case, we deliver by email as a default. And the key thing there is if there are firewall issues, email typically does get through to people. And so email is the lowest common denominator, and we have not abandoned that yet. Also, the last thing I'll just say is that if you have a government web provider, if there's a company that you have a contract with and they provide services to lots of governments, ask for more engagement features. You know, make them compete to serve you with the features that you might want, like around a survey tool, for example.
Yeah. One other thing just in this regard, this is a little bit maybe Web 3.0. There are a lot of players starting to kind of explore developing these tools, but we've worked in Palo Alto with a startup to try to build, to take web-based communication and link it much more specifically to place, because cities are place-based, and ultimately the people we most want to be communicating with are our residents, not necessarily always the wider world, and how to do that. So we've worked with a startup that actually is designed to build on a block-by-block basis networks that actually can be self-created by our citizens, even in a sense without us being involved. We're providing the platform. And the thought here on this is this will allow us to have an opportunity to do our push communication, but also to be able to target it to particular areas of the city. But more than that, what it lets citizens do themselves is build relationships in their own neighborhood using this same platform with us never being involved. So if somebody's cat has disappeared or whatever they did, and they use this one platform. And the desire is to try to be able to support community building without the city even being involved at all, and that hopefully there's more trust in us when we're also pushing our information out to folks, and then also trying to provide a platform that lets Facebook and other vehicles connect on a selected sort of basis by people, because one of the big problems we all have, of course, even if we go to our Facebook page every other day, we're inundated, even with the existing technologies. How do I keep up with it? And what everybody says is, you need to come to me, and I need to be able to customize what it is as much as possible as what I want. So that's sort of, I think, sort of on the edge of what a lot of folks are tinkering with now. So if you're not doing that, keep tuned. We'll have some more at the next conference. Yes, sir.
Hey there, Omar Ahmad, City of San Carlos. Good job, Brian. I wanted to, and you can't hire him. We're keeping him. one of the things that Brian had mentioned that I wanted to add some color to was what happened in San Bruno and what was going on with Twitter. This was actually something that a few days before that I had brought up in City Council. I used to work at Discovery Channel, and a few weeks before, a guy walked in with bombs strapped to his chest and took hostages. What happened afterward? You couldn't make a phone call into that entire town, and you couldn't get a phone call out of it. Cell phone reception was shot. The only way we could figure out where people were or if they were safe was through text messaging and through Twitter. And a bunch of us got online, were able to say, Clark is standing at this corner, he saw Rob. We put that up on a web page. So as people start to look at disaster planning and how you're going to respond, your infrastructure for people looking for information is going to be overwhelmed, and these tools are going to be critical as you start to look out. The other thing I would offer, just we were talking about blogs. I know that I run my own blog. I have been called out by other blogs to say, how come you're not commenting here? How come you're not commenting there? What I would offer to my fellow electeds is I actually put up a policy that I will not comment on other blogs. There are anonymous forums and that have been hacked. So if you come to my blog, you know it was me. If you go to another blog, I will tell you it is not me.
That's a very the hacker point's a very good point.
Yeah, not that I would ever do it, but as a former Napster guy, I would never. But I would tell people, be certain to own your words and make it verifiable and traceable, and also leave a back door that if it's out there, no, that's not me.
Thank you.
Yeah, let me add one more thing to what Vice Mayor Ahmad said on a different but related point. And I alluded to it in the slide, this question of why, you know, your strategy and why is your agency using Twitter and Facebook and what are you doing with it? We purposely, when we set up our services, we tend to lock things down. So, for example, on Facebook, while we started it wide open, I'll tell you in all honesty, today we create the topics and you can respond to postings, but that's it. Most of the rest of it is locked. Some people question that decision. What I said to them is, we're not, kind of to Jim's point as well, we're not in the business of running discussion forums. You know, we're disseminating city information. And I'm not making a judgment here. In each of your communities, you can do what works for you. But in our community, and again, it may be true in yours as well, we have two realtors who already have existing blogs, and they do run discussion forums about San Carlos, and they do moderate it. And early on in my discussions with our web manager, the two of us were talking about this, and I said, you know, I think that Bob and Chuck should continue to run and moderate the discussion forums for San Carlos, because then they can decide what postings are appropriate and not. And actually, having talked with Bob, and actually I hadn't met Chuck until I got into this world, and now I know Chuck, they have some pretty interesting stories to tell about some blog posts that they've moderated. And so I've basically taken that off my plate, and I can't really tell you that Bob and Chuck work for me, but in a way I've sort of delegated that to them, saying, you guys had discussion forums about San Carlos? Go for it. Keep moderating. Have a nice life. We're not going there. So it's a strategy to think about.
One connecting point, though, as part of the Sunshine 2.0 guide, one of the indicators is whether you have a community link section. Is there a place on the government website that shows it's not a dead end, and it actually helps people who don't know about those blogs, potentially, or the newspaper or website, find it? And so if you have places where people can interact in your community, help people find it appropriately. The last thing, one thing I'll say is, too, if you say you don't have interactivity in your community that really is building community, it's just nasty stuff on anonymous chat or whatever, talk to your community foundation. Talk to folks that might actually support, hey, let's create a more civil, engaging place. You described something that we're also working on as a concept. How can we have sort of a grid for civic engagement in our community as a whole? And how can we as government say, we're going to be part of this? Mm-hmm. Just as the folks in Rotary and Lions and whatever, you know, if you're a smaller town, it might also come to the table with.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes?
Helene Schneider, Mayor of Santa Barbara. Thank you for doing this. First, a comment and two quick questions. We had a series of wildfires the last several years, and actually tweeting with links to where the evacuation sites are and those was more helpful than the local news and then some of the local web newspapers like the Independent and this Ed Hat blog that we have would then repost it, and it was a really great tool to get the message out after a briefing about what was happening while the fires were burning, and it got multiple hits. So that's another good tool for it. Two quick questions. One's a technical one if you have a Facebook page in terms of use, if you're trying to delete postings that are inappropriate, but you have to show that you have terms of use. You know, you have to show that there are rules in order to delete something, as opposed to being accused of then directing the kind of content that's there. How do you technically do that? Is there a link right there on the front page? I don't know. And then the second question, I guess, have you ever had to block a person? Is there a legal issue related to taking someone off your friends list?
Okay. Ariel?
Yeah, I don't think
we're hoping that everything we've been doing is actually what he says the way we should do it.
Right. There's not a Facebook death penalty, so I don't think you can block people. But I don't think that there is a threshold of bad behavior that allows you to permanently block someone from commenting. So, second thing on the technical question, there are tabs up at the top of the page, and the terms of use just go right into one of those tabs.
Yeah, but let me handle the technical part of that. and we wrestle with this as well, and this also probably will help you understand why I began my little dialogue with our former youth commissioner, now Facebook employee. You know, when we started this and we began to talk about our policy and under what circumstances we might, you know, manage the forum before we turned everything off, if you have a posting that you think is inappropriate or under your policy, is they give you several choices. You can report it to Facebook, and we said, okay, but then what happens? Mm-hmm. Posting's still there. You can delete the posting, or you can ban the user. And so that's something I suppose to think about as well, and would follow in the terms of use that Ariel's talking about, is not only talk about what postings you would deem inappropriate or not allow, but then what action might you take? Because in Facebook, there are, in fact, three choices. Another thing that's interesting, too, I should add about Twitter, and I think one of the reasons that some cities only have Twitter or do it first, is even though Twitter, technically, someone can respond to you or send you a message, because it shows up in a different place in most cases, it's almost like you've turned off the comments even though you really haven't. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a certain comfort there. So that's another piece to think about as well.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Gary Kovacic, Mayor Pro Tem of Arcadia. I have a question about the use of public funds, and maybe this is for Ariel. Our city takes a fairly narrow point of view so that on all city publications, our names are mentioned as members of the city council, but rarely are our pictures shown or anything else because of providing unfair promotion for us individually. So I'm wondering how much of this commentary by a council member should be taking place on an official city organ, and how much should be done on our own elsewhere.
Those hard copy mailings are covered by the mass mailing rules from the Fair Political Practices Commission. So far, those rules don't apply to electronic media, so there's no prohibition on that you're disseminating more than 500 pieces of mail when you put your name up on a website or have a city council, any more than having a city council member identifying page, which many cities have. Does that address your concern?
Well, then how about when we morph into Facebook or Twitter, should this be done independently, or can it be done as part of the city communication app?
Oh, I think it can be done as mm-hmm. part of the city website. The issue will come up around campaign time, and again, the terms of use ought to restrict the use of the site from campaigning mm-hmm. activity.
Yeah, and I was going to add, too, you know, what we've done in our city, we actually have a project where we're researching that under California law, so we're going to poll all the cities, so we may have more on that soon. But to date, you know, folks like Vice Mayor Maud, their e-newsletters and websites and blogs are their own, and they live outside the city. And our council, kind of to your point, recently had a discussion as an interim policy as staff is researching. They voted not to link to even to those, again, in the extreme of caution, given California's, you know, various Brown Act and public records laws.
Not to be controversial, but that's the end of democracy right there. And here's why. Essentially, if you're an elected official and you're serving citizens in governance, you deserve the tools you need to best represent people. And so when you're campaigning, yes, private funds, private tools, all you like. But if you're actually in service, what you'll end up having are the cyber elite elected officials that know how to use everything. Maybe they can even use their staff if they have staff, but they're on private systems. And those that need a little more help or need some training don't have any support. In Minneapolis, every city council member has an email newsletter built in. No, they can't use it, of course, for campaigning, but they have many of them have over 1,000 constituents that have built up on that list. It's owned by the city, so when that council member leaves, that list still sticks with the district, right? And so they know when they send a note out to their in governance, they can get responses. And so I'm very concerned about sort of privatizing the microphone or the webcast in a digital setting in governance.
So let me ask just one kind of concluding question, and then we'll just those of us who are still around can sort of have after meeting questions. A lot of the comments here have really been, and questions have been about, okay, how is it that we really embrace this technology so that we can communicate, and different communities are at different stages in that. The law is evolving. Right now, we're still on the frontier in lots of respects. But ultimately, you're going to find in your community that you're going to sort of resolve this and clarify that to your satisfaction. And then we're at the next stage, which is, ultimately, we are interested in two-way communication. You know, so the extent that, say, for example, we're interested in ensuring that government is more accountable, and that that's very clear through our own attitudes about open government, transparency, and things. We're faced with the other question, which is, okay, also, how do we ensure that citizens are also more accountable? Because ultimately, in a democracy, and with the big issues that we're facing in our communities, this partnership between representative government and the citizens themselves is essential to what we're going to do. So with this new technology, I don't know if any of our pioneers here have any sort of thoughts in that realm, where we're going or what we need.
You know, one of the most exciting things about these issues forums that we've had over time is citizen-to-citizen accountability. I mean, one of the things I'm most concerned about is what is some other citizen, be they a lobbyist or an everyday person, how are they trying to influence how government governs me? So when I go to the legislature, I can see people testifying. You know, you have records of campaign finance, record who's donating where. In a bit digital sense, I also wanted, in some ways, to see transparency around. So what's going into that black box, you know, to the elected officials? Or, you know, how are people basically trying to change how I'm governed? And so I think the ability to build in transparency for citizens to actually hold each other accountable. And the last thing I'll say is that what I find happens in these public spaces is that people may come with their single issue, but then they're competing with all the other citizens that have their issue, and suddenly they realize, oh, man, I'm glad I'm not an elected official. This is really complex, you know, having to balance out all these issues. And so I think that interchange and having spaces like that are really helpful.
A couple points to that in terms of both what we're doing and where it's going. You know, not directly on point with social media, but very related to the website. One of the more interesting projects that we did a couple years ago, we were working not only with our website vendor, Civica, which has a content management system that many of you now use as well, but also worked with a company called Sire in document management. And we created our own portal, which we now brand. So you go to epackets.net, and what we have up there for everybody in the town is the entire packet for not only all the council meetings, but every single city commission. And I can't tell you that everybody in town finds this compelling reading or even downloads it, but there's a certain warm and fuzzy feeling and comfort knowing that the people on the dais, whether it's the city council, the parking rec commission, the planning commission, or anybody that you could name, you can look at or print out before you show up at the meeting the exact same set of maps, documents, reports that the council members have in front of them, and they have no more information than you as a citizen do. And I got to tell you that even though the number of people who reacted to that project when we first did it with Sire, and of course I'm sure now other cities hopefully are utilizing that capability as well, there was like a group of maybe 5 or 10 people who were excited about it, but it rippled through the community and people began to say, wow, so like you're not just saying you're transparent, you really are, because we now have everything. And again, you know, when you publish agendas, or I mean you're publishing videos of your meeting, the gap between what you had been doing and that taking that final step, if that's the final step, is not that great, but it was fascinating to watch the reaction of particularly those who go to a lot of these meetings. And my philosophy, you know, prior to that, we were publishing selectively, you know, environmental documents or staff reports on what we thought were the major issues, try to get at most of it. What we found was that when people would show up at those meetings, they were better informed. The quality of the testimony and the discussion in front of the city council was better. And so rather than people saying, I'm opposed to this or I'm supporting it, they would begin to understand the trade-offs that the council members were wrestling with or the commissioners. And a classic example of this was we had a development across the street from the community. It was part of it was historical, part of it was a vacant lot. And the developer wanted to level all of it, and those of us on staff were like in horror going, you can't do that. And the preservationist said, you've got to save all of it. And we thought, well, financially that probably doesn't work. We needed to find a compromise. And I thought one of the great moments in that big debate of what they called later the Garden Hacienda Project or development was when one of the folks opposed to the projects, one of the preservationists said, you know, I was opposed to this whole thing and I thought it should all be preserved. And then I read the stuff on the city website and the packet and I realized that the developer has to cover his costs and maybe make a profit. And I thought, okay, you know, this is only one small victory, but all of that work on that ePackets project paid off. So, you know, it does work.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Paul, did you have a question?
Quick follow-up. Paul Navazio from the City of Davis. Maybe not on social media, but when you started mentioning about ePackets and sort of digital communication, question has come up recently at our city council, what the issues are and what the ability might be to expand the formal public comment period at council meetings to those who aren't in the room.
Ariel?
Any comments on that?
Ariel's got that.
Good question for Harriet. I don't see any distinction between an email commenting on a agenda item and a web posting.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you wanted to have it before or during public hearing, you don't have a problem, regardless of the medium.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
I was just going to add on to that. I don't know if they still do this, but in the city of Cupertino, at one point, what they used to do is they would do the public testimony, but before they would close the public hearing and have the council deliberations, the mayor used to go to the city clerk and they would read into the record all the emails that had been received during the meeting. And he used to say, quote, "And now let's go to the internet." And I don't know if they still do that, but I thought that was a clever way of being more inclusive and not forcing someone who maybe was watching the cable cast at home to throw on their robe and dash down to City Hall. So I guess Ariel's suggesting that sort of thing's still legal, so maybe that's another, you know, opportunity.
We have the domain name publicmeetings.info, where we are basically exploring just that issue. How can you systematize the release of public meeting agendas such that people could comment on them and or be notified about agenda items that hit keywords that interest them from multiple jurisdictions? So that's one of the challenges from a citizen, is you have all these agendas that come from all these different overlapping jurisdictions, and how are you going to find out about that agenda item that you might want to comment on or want to read a packet on? And it's really in concept stage. I know that there's one Granicus user, I want to say it's a city in Georgia, that has created simply using Google Docs spreadsheet tied to their agenda where they can comment on specific agenda items before the meeting. And so I'm very interested in any examples like that that you might run into. And definitely on that publicmeetings.info page, there's a link to that Granicus example at the bottom.
Okay, great. Panel, thank you all. A hand for our panel. Thank you very much. We've recorded this. It's available on the conference site. The Institute for Local Government, again, those of you who weren't here at the beginning, has an incredible array of resources on the whole subject of collaborative governance. You can get documents on the principles of civic engagement. You have different social media policies that different communities have adopted that you could look at there. There's legal issues and some advice, all of those things. Go to the Institute's website and take a look. And again, thank you all for spending almost an hour and a half or so here together at the end of the conference. Everybody seemed really engaged with our panel, so we thank you for that.
Moderating what they were adding and what they were saying. So when one guy said F the police, I'm like, whoa, wait a minute, violation, take it down. And this was happening all hours. Is there anything worth putting on Facebook today? Is there anything worth putting on?